Good morning, everyone. Hope you have a wonderful day. Continue, we left off on the top of page 6A, the first chapter in Baba Metzia. We dedicate this class to our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land, especially those on the front line, and may all the wounded have a full and speedy recovery. May all the hostages return home safely. I'll bring you a proof that even though we suspect that he stole the money, but we don't suspect him of swearing falsely. In other words, even a person who will steal swearing falsely is a red line he won't cross. Well, where do we know this from? Because Rabbi Nachman said, that if a person totally denies it, the whole thing, the rabbis say, they enacted a Shavua. But the question is, why are you wasting your time? Why are you making him swear? You suspect and you don't believe him. You think he's stealing it. He's lying. If he's lying and he's planning to steal the money, then he would swear falsely also. How is swearing going to help? Why enact and make him swear? For what? If you suspect him of lying, then of cheating, of stealing, he'll lie on their oath also. Now, you can say, why don't you say the same thing we said till now? That maybe he really owes the money, but he just doesn't have the money. He's buying time.
He's time to get the money.
He's time.
Right.
So why does the Gemara ask with certainty? Well, for Rav Nachman it's a proof. Right. Why is this any more proof than the case of a Maid of a Mixus, partial admission? So Tosfos says, because Rav Nachman says, even in a case where you can't say that he's buying time, for example, the guy comes to him, he says, you know, that $100 you're holding in my hand, or that object that you're holding in your hand, that's mine. And he denies it. See, you can't say, well, he's buying time. What do you mean buying time? You have it. If you're planning to tell the truth and to give it back to him, you give it to him right now. So you're planning to steal it. And nevertheless, you make him swear. So what's the point of making him swear? Just like you suspect him of stealing, why don't you just suspect him that he'll swear falsely also? So swearing won't clarify anything. The owner says to the storekeeper, listen, pay my workers. In other words, let them shop for you free and I'll pay you. For them, we'll be free and I'll pay you. So then they both come. The shopper says, I never shopped. I never took anything from the shop. You have to pay me my salary. The storekeeper says, what do you mean? I gave them. I'm based on your word. I gave them. Now you have to repay me. So they're both demanding payment. So the law says, he says, they both have to swear and they both collect from the owner. So the question is, what's the point of it? So, but they have to swear. Each one has to swear in front of each other. Because one of them is definitely lying, right? Either the storekeeper did give them the merchandise, the food, or he didn't. So one of them is lying. The workers are lying, or the storekeeper is lying. So they have to face each other, and they have to swear. So the question is, why is the point of making them swear? If you suspect that one of them is lying, he'll swear falsely also. So it's not going to clarify anything. A custodian who claims that it was stolen, he has to swear three oaths. One oath is that wasn't negligent. He watched it. He wasn't negligent. He didn't leave the door wide open. That I didn't use it without permission. The moment you use it without permission, you become a thief. You become a thief, and then you're responsible no matter what happens. That you didn't use it for yourself, personal usage. And the third one is, maybe he wants to hold on to it. I like it. So that didn't happen. So we say, so what do we see? The question is, if you suspect him of using it for himself, meaning stealing it or keeping it for himself, so he'll swear falsely also. So we see from all of this, he'll falsely swear. So we see from this, that even a person who will steal, but this is a red line, he won't cross. he won't swear falsely. And therefore, he'll admit the truth. So therefore, it does clarify, it is effective. So we see that even though we suspect them of theft, but we don't suspect them of swearing falsely. We don't say Miguel Khajamin Khajash was
the third office, the one that
right, Abaya Amar, Abaya says Khashina. No, Abaya says that we do. And that's the law, by the way. The law is if you khashad amaina, if you suspect them of stealing, you also suspect them of swearing falsely. It's not believed. Abaya says that we do suspect, and we don't believe his oath. If he can steal, he'll swear falsely also. Yes, but over here, Chashina, here, what we're worried is Shema Milvi Shena. Yes, the reason we say that he swears if he's in total denial, because we say that maybe he has an old loan. The person owes him money. You know how people have amnesia? They lend, they borrow, they have the chutzpah to call you up for a second loan or for a third loan, but they never even paid back the first loan. Never even bothered to even mention that they owe you. Can you imagine the chutzpah? They don't even mention, no shame, no embarrassment. It's not shame and embarrassment. They like have amnesia. They forget. Oh, they conveniently forget. You already borrowed once and twice. You never even once offered to pay a dime. Let me give an installment. Let me try to pay. No, they call you for a second loan and then for a third loan. So he says, you know, it's a waste of time. I'm going to ask him for the loan. He probably forgot about it. So he says to himself, let me take this item because he owes it to me. So therefore, he thinks it's his right to take it. He's not planning to steal it. The guy owes me. So I have a right to claim it's mine. So therefore, if you make him swear, but really he doesn't have a right, just because he owes you, there's a legitimate way of taking it and an illegitimate way. This is an illegitimate way of taking it. So you make him swear, and of course he's not going to swear falsely. He's not a thief. So he'll admit he'll admit the truth. And therefore, he'll give it back to the person, to the owner. That's against Nishka B'lo Yeshua. So why make him swear altogether? Just give it to him. Why should he swear? And he swears and he keeps it. Let him just keep it without an oath. Ella rather chashina, and we're worried. Shema safik milvishen isla. He himself is not sure. He also forgot. It was so long ago. He can't keep track with this con artist, or with this nudnik, or with this clown. So he can't even remember himself. Did I lend him? Didn't I lend him? How much did I lend him? He himself is not sure. He thinks. You're in doubt. You have no right to keep it. That's why we make him swear and he'll come clean. No, I'm not sure. And therefore, he'll give it back.
If you have no proof, you can still back the code if you have no proof.
If a person is ready to take money just on a doubt, maybe the guy owes me, maybe he'll swear to that effect also. If he thinks to himself, well, there's a good chance, 50-50 chance that he owes me, it's my right to take. So he'll say it's my right to swear falsely also. No, a person will steal, will take money just on a doubt. Maybe he owes me. But he won't swear on a doubt. Why? Why the difference? Why the distinction? My time is mammon is b'chazar. Shmuel, that's what's up. If you're making a mistake, you remind yourself later, you can always give the money back. I'm not a thief. I think he owes me, so I'm going to take it. If later on I found that he doesn't owe me, I'll give it back to him. Shavua, you can't take back. He swore in Hashem's name. You can't take back. So he swore falsely. So he's not going to swear unless he knows for certain, unless he knows 100%. So before, it'll return back to the owner. Boy, Rabbi Zeid had a question. He asked. Talk for echad b'fanenu. Two come before the court. They're both holding onto the garment, to the cloak. And one of them grabs it away in front of us. Mao. Do we say, well, now he's holding onto it, so before they had a chance to swear. So what do we say? Do we say, well, he's grabbing it now, so now it's all his? So Gemara says, wait a minute, hey Chidami, what are we talking about? How is this? E the shasik, if he's silent while it's being grabbed from him, it means he's admitting that it belongs to him. And if he yells, what are you doing? So my Gavalil Mevet, he's not admitting anything. You grabbed it away from me. Maybe you're stronger. You go to the gym a lot more than I do, so you're able to grab it, but I'm screaming. What are you doing? So he's protesting. So what can he do? Yes. Right. We only need this. We don't need this only in a case. First he was silent. When he first grabbed it, he said nothing. Then he started yelling. So what's the question? At the end of the day, he's yelling. No, my midi ishtik igluyiglila. Midi ishtik igluyiglila. Do we say? He was quiet initially. It means he's admitting that it belongs to the other one. Idilma. And then he changes his mind. Idilma, perhaps. Even the katzava, hashda. Since at the end he does yell, he does protest, he's revealing the reason he was silent, not because he admitted. He says, the rabbis are watching this. They see what kind of, it's ridiculous. In front of the rabbis he's grabbing, they see he's a ganef. So I don't have to say anything. It's self-evident. But then he sees this and then he starts yelling. It's the same. Okay, give me back my garments. I'll bring you a proof. We learn about when do we say that you divide? If two people come to the court, they're both holding onto a cloak, to a garment, when do you say you divided? Shnei Madukin, they're both holding onto it. Shnei Madukin. But if only one of them is holding onto the talus, the garment, he has to bring a proof through witnesses that it's his. So how is this braisa? What are we talking about? If literal prita, what's obvious? What's the braisa coming to teach me? Of course, if you're wearing a garment and you're the only sole owner of the garment, holder of the garment, we say, of course, it's yours. It's not even a claim. Why are you wasting our time? Ella, rather, should talk for echad b'fanenu. Must be talking about a case where he's holding the garment because he grabbed it from him. First they came to the court, they were both holding onto the garment. Then one of them grabbed it. And we say that it belongs to the one who grabs it. And you have to say, he's talking about, in the beginning it was silent. Because again, if he was silent the whole time, then obviously he admits. Well, again, what's the point? If he's protesting, then he's protesting. What do you want? The guy is stronger than me, so he grabbed it out of me. But, so we must be talking about a case he was silent in the beginning, then he yelled, and you would think that maybe his yelling is, it's revealing that the reason he was silent, not because he admitted that it belongs to the other guy, but because he thought the rabbis see this for themselves. I don't have to say anything. I rest my case. So the braisa says, no, since he was silent, he should have yelled, should have protested right away. Since he was silent, he didn't protest. It belongs to the other person. By the way, if they come in front of the court, two of them holding on to it. The court says, go divide it. Then they leave.
Yeah.
And then one of them grabs it and comes back to inside, and he's the only one holding it.
Yeah.
So then it's his. You know, well, the other one says, what do you mean? He grabbed it out of me. I don't know. Prove it. Our principle is, whoever's holding it is his. Possession is ownership. We assume that he's owning it. Now, here we're talking about a case where he grabbed it in front of the court. It's different. We grabbed it in front of us. We saw what happened. But because he was silent. So the Braise is telling me that silence means admission. Since he didn't protest immediately, that means he's admitting it belongs to the other person. Even if he yells later on, protests later on, too little, too late. No, you misunderstood the Braise. How come I ask you? No, the Braise is talking about it. They came before the court, they were both holding on to it. We said to them, the court said to them, Zilu Plugu, go split it. The Nafku, they left. Other also, and then when they come back in, he tough as luck. I don't know. One of them is holding on to it. Hayam, one says, do you deal it?
This is where they get that saying, possession is 9/10 of the law. Is that where this comes from?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Zayama, the one who's holding it, says, he went out and then he admitted to me that I was right. It's all mine, and that's why I'm the only one holding it now. And Vayam, another one says, what do you mean? I rented it out to him. So we say to him, one second. Till now you're claiming he's a thief. You're saying it's all yours and he grabbed it away from you. Now all of a sudden you're trusting him and you're renting it out to him, knowing that he can just come and claim that it's his because he's holding on to it. You always say, Mo, or if you want to tell me, like we learned, also, come on. One of them is holding on to it. They come before the court, one of them is holding on to it. And the other one is not really holding on to it. He's just like hanging on. Hanging on the threads or whatever, on the seam, on the... That's what the Bryce is coming to teach me, that that's not called holding on. He's just holding on, like hanging on. The other one is really solidly holding it, and it's all his. Even the sumchus that holds whenever you're in doubt, you split it down the middle without an oath. By the sumchus, the sirchel of klumi. But in this case, where one is holding on solidly and the other one is just hanging on, it's nothing. And therefore, you give the entire thing, you don't divide it, split it down the middle. There's no doubt here. You give the entire thing to the one who's holding it on solid. Imtim Suleiman, if you're going to want to answer the previous question and say, that if someone grabs it in front of us, even if he's silent initially and then he protests, you take it out, of, you remove it from him. You say that the initial silence is not an admission. But what if Higdisha? Higdisha ain't a Megadesh. But if he sanctifies it, it's not sanctified. You can't grab it. So too, if you designate it to the temple treasury, you make it sacred,
it doesn't hold.
You have no right to. It's not yours to designate. The guy says it's his. That's no question. The question is, im tim tzolem, if you're gonna say that tokva, he gets to keep it. The fact that he's silent, he's admitting that it belongs to him. And therefore, even though if he screams later on, and therefore the one who grabbed it gets to keep it. So the question is, Igdisha, what if he just sanctified it without grabbing it? Belay tokva. Ma, what's the din? What's the question? Kivan dam amar, since the master, the rabbi, says, Amiros, Ligavoya, just let it dam me, that saying, just verbally, giving it to Hashem, to the temple treasury, sanctifying it. It's as if you're physically, it's the equivalent of physically handing it to the private person. You don't need another acquisition. Speaking, saying, committing, that itself already acquires. So therefore, by him sanctifying it, command the takva dam is the equivalent of grabbing.
He snatched it.
It's like the equivalent of snatching. So just like over there, if he's silent, it means he's admitting and he has a right to keep it. So to over here, he would have a right to sanctify it. Dilma perhaps, harsh to me, like talk about, he never grabbed it. The chsiv yish ki yagdish is basic, koidish. Ma basic, b'shusse, avkol, b'shusse, lefokot, b'shusse. You could only sanctify, dedicate, designate something to the temple treasury that's in your possession. It's not in your possession. The other guy is holding on to it. So it's not in your possession. The house is in possession. So too, only anything that's in your possession. This is not considered in your possession. Because the other one is grabbing onto it and he says it's all mine. We're talking about a case, the same case we were discussing earlier. He designated it to the temple treasury and the other one is silent. And then he yells and he protests. The question is, if silence is an admission that it belongs to him, so therefore, it's like I'm watching it for him. If someone is watching something to you, it's in the hands of the custodian, the owner could designate it to the Hekdesh, because it's considered in his possession. It's not the equivalent. when he grabs it, so his silence means something. Why is silent? The guy is grabbing it. That means you're admitting it belongs to him. But if I'm holding on to it, he didn't grab it. I'm still holding on to it. And the guy says something. I'm giving it away. I'm giving it away to the temple treasury. I'm giving it to the tzedakah, to the temple. Why do I have to say anything? I don't care what he says. It's not his to give away. I'm holding on to it. I'm saying it's all mine. I don't even have to respond. His lack of response doesn't prove anything in this case. The fact that he's silent is not admitting anything. Tashma, I'll bring your proof. Mother says, Ahu Masusa, we continue on side B, 6B. Masusa, yeah, there was a bathhouse. There were two people fighting over it. Who does it belong to? Hi, Amadi, this one belongs to me. Amadi, it belongs to me. Come, Chadim and I, one of them stood up. Akdashe, he sanctified it. He gave it as a donation to use as a mikveh. You were looking for your men's mikveh. You found your men's mikveh. I'm designating it to the Shemayim to heaven. Parshaminei. So people didn't want to use it anymore because now it belongs to Hashem. It belongs to the temple treasury, the Shemayim. Parshaminei. Rabbi Hanani, Rabbi Yeshu, Kol Rabbanon. All the rabbis of Hanani, Rabbi Yeshu, stop using it. Because maybe it's his, and therefore he has a right to sanctify it, and you're not allowed to benefit. You can't use it for your own personal usage. When you go before Rav Chisda in a place called Kafri, and they ask him, what's the law with this masusa? Rabbi came to Sura on the way to Kafri. Rabbi Amnuna said, the Rabba Masnizni. See, he discussed it with Rabbi Amnuna. He met Rabbi Amnuna. With Rav Chisda on the way, he ran in Sura. He ran into Rabbi Amnuna. So he says, Masnizni, it's an open mission. It says, Safik Bechayre is Echad Bechayre Adam, Echad Bechayre Behema. Bein tehedim, bein temeim, hameitzim chavir el averai. Here, we're talking about, we're not sure if he is a firstborn, the firstborn son or the firstborn animal. Let's say there was a miscarriage before. We're not sure if it was a real child, the miscarriage, or it was just, it was nothing. If there was a real child, then he's no longer firstborn, yeah. So we say, or a kosher animal, in other words, a sheep, a goat, right. a cow, right. So a calf, the calf, or if it's a donkey, right, a non-kosher animal. So either way, we say, you have to prove it.
You can't. Kohen has to prove.
Kohen has to prove. Prove it's a b'chayr. Am I giving it to you? Am I giving it to you?
Kohen has to come up with proof.
But or vice versa. If the Kohen grabbed it,
snatches it.
He owns it now. And the Yisrael has to bring a proof.
Right.
But Tani Allah, that even if no one grabs it,
since it's a doubt,
so you have to treat it like a b'chor, and you're not allowed to shear its wool, and you're not allowed to work with it, because it's holy. Maybe it's a b'chor. So what do we see from there? Bahacha, in this case, the Amar Takvi Kohen. So we must be talking about a similar case, where the Kohen grabbed it. Initially, the owner is silent, and then the owner starts protesting. So we say, that the Kohen gets to keep it. And nevertheless, we say, if no one grabbed it,
Even if you come up with proof later, you come up with proof, but still on the coin. No, not proof.
If you protest later.
Asurim,
but if you don't grab it, Asurim begin avoida. So it's exactly the same case with the bathhouse. That if someone grabs it and the other one is silent and yells, we say, he can't take it, you can't extract it from him. And if you go ahead and you sanctify it, even if you don't grab it, you have to say that it's holy. You have to treat it as holy, and they're right. You can't use it. You can't use the bathhouse.
So in other words, the two guys in the bathhouse.
So Rabbi said, "Rabbi Nuna, Kedushas B'chayr Kamra, you bring me a proof from Kedushas B'chayr." Leila, maybe Malachu Ril, I'll tell you. Talk about Koye, Mitzineisim Yadim. Maybe the Brayis means. I mean, the Mishnah means that Meitzuchel Varai is only that the Kohen can't extract it from the Yisrael. But if a kohen grabbed it, we do remove it from him. You have no right to grab it.
Why would we take it away?
Nevertheless, the Yisrael is not allowed to work the animal or shear the wool. Why? Because its holiness doesn't come from the kohen. It comes on its own. So I don't need to sanctify it. It's automatically sanctified. And when in doubt, it's a biblical doubt. If it's automatically sanctified and it's a biblical doubt, therefore I can't use it. I can't work the animal. I can't shear its wool. Not because you, because he went ahead and sanctified it. The kohen has no sanctification. The kohen, even if the kohen grabbed it, we take it away from the kohen. Right. Surely if the kohen stands up and he says it's holy, it doesn't mean anything. Not because the kohen said it's holy. Him saying means absolutely nothing. It's the Jews, and you can't take it away from the Jew. That's only when it comes to financial matters of taking it away and giving it to the kohen. When it comes to the prohibition, we don't know. No one knows what happened. Was it? It's not here in front of. We don't know. Was it a miscarriage? Was it a real child? Not. Is it really the firstborn, or not? And therefore, you're not allowed. In the case of the animal, you can't work it and you can't shear its wool. So we brought a b'risim sayla that supports your point that the kohen cannot grab it, and even if he grabs it, we take it away from him. We learned the b'risa asveke is sheep that we're not sure. There was a donkey, and we don't know if the donkey was the firstborn or not, like we said, right? So you have to separate a sheep to remove the prohibition, just in case the donkey is a firstborn. You have to break its neck. So you separate a sheep. But instead of giving it to the kohen, this sheep that you separated, you have to give it to the kohen. Because it's a doubt, you tell the kohen, prove it. I'm not giving you any money, you have to prove it. So I don't have to give it to the kohen, and you can use it. So he says, if Yisrael has a few of these sheep, let's say he has 10 of these sheep, that he separated out of doubt, just to make sure that if the donkey is indeed a firstborn, so you can eat and benefit from the donkey. So nichnas and ledir, they all go into the barn. This aser, because you have to tithe, you have to put them in the barn. The tenth one becomes tithe. So what's the question? If you're going to say that talk for koyin, if the koyin grabs it, then he gets to keep it. Why do you have to go? Why do you have to tithe? The tenth animal, why do you have to tithe? It belongs to the koyin. Maybe it belongs to the koyin. And if the koyin would grab it, it would be his. So how could you fulfill your obligation of tithing? We don't have 10 of such animals, even if it's one of them. But he can also go in to be counted as one of the 10. And if you take this animal, you make it a tithing, the 10th one. How could you do that with the money of the kohen? Since you're saying if the kohen can grab it, and if he grabs it, it's his. So how could you exempt yourself and do the mitzvah of tithing? Every 10th animal, you have to tithe, and you have to designate it as a sacrifice and offer it as a sacrifice. How could you exempt yourself with money that belongs to a kohen? It's not yours. You have to tithe with your own animals. I can't take 9 my animals and take a 10th animal that belongs to someone else and, you know, offer someone else, sacrifice someone else's animal. You have to be your animal. So we see that the kohen has no part in this animal. Even if you grab it, we take it away from him. It's surely not the kohen. So therefore, it belongs 100% to the owner. If it belongs 100% to the owner, he can use it as a tithe. He's tithing with his own money, with his own animal. It's not a proof. This is not a proof to Rabbah. Because I can say, oh, my skin, you know what the Rabbah is talking about. I'm going, for example, the less little Tisha, there's only 9 sheep and this sheep that we're in doubt. Only then could he take it in? Because why? Because then mimanavsha, make up your mind. If the Jew is obligated that this animal belongs to him, now he has 10 animals, so it's fine. In other words, if the donkey indeed was not the firstborn, so this sheep is 100% his, so now he has 10 animals, so then he fulfills his obligation. Shapri Kamasa, he has a right to tithe, he's tithing with his own animal. But if it's really a b'chor, if the donkey in reality was the firstborn, and it really belongs to the, and you substituted for the sheep, and the sheep really belongs to the koyin, so then he only has 9 animals. He doesn't have to tithe in the first place. So big deal. So there's no tithing. So he's not exempting himself with something that's not his. There's no need to. He doesn't have to exempt himself. There's no obligation in the first place. But then Abaye refuted his own refutation. He says, what I said is not true. Surely Rabbi Hanani is right. He could prove from the Braisa that if the Kohen grabs it, we would actually take it away from the Kohen. It doesn't belong to the Kohen at all. Why? Because the Sveika Labarisuri. If a sheep that you're in doubt, if you're obligated to tithe, then you're not obligated to tithe. For example, with this not, because you learn the Mishnah and tractate B'chedes. Kofetz echad mehen l'toicha. What if there's a whole group of sheep in the barn, in the stable, and one sheep who was already counted, kofetz echad mehen l'toicha, to the sheep that weren't counted yet. He can't tell which one is which. Kulam p'tur in the rule exam. But since in their midst is one sheep that was already counted, that's exam. So every sheep that's here, it's a doubt. Maybe this is the sheep. So therefore, even those that were not tithed are exempt. Because every one of them is in doubt. So if you're going to say that it's in doubt, then there's no point in tithing. So why does he say you have to tithe? The fact that he says you have to tithe, because there is no doubt. Because the Kohen has no part in this. Even if the Kohen grabbed it, we would take it away from the Kohen. But the Jew says, it's mine. What are you talking about? It's mine. The donkey, it's not a firstborn. It's my sheep. I don't have to give it to the Kohen. So even if the Kohen grabs it away from him, we would take it back, extract it from the Kohen. So there's no doubt. It's certainly the Jews. Well, certainly the Jews. That's why he has to tithe and he could tithe. If it's going to enter your mind, you're going to say, Sveika boyasuri lase. Boyasuri, that even a doubt. You do have to tithe if you have the opportunity. So why are all exempt? Lase. Mimanavshach. Tithe, either way, why do you say if one jumps in, one that was already counted jumps into this whole herd, you don't have to tithe any of them? Why? Tithe, you have nothing to lose. Manusha, make up your mind. Every 10 that go out, if that 10th that went out with is obligated, in other words, this whole entire batch of 10 that go out, none of them were counted yet. So Shapir Meisers, then I'm doing well. Then it's a legitimate Meisers, legitimate tithing. Vila Barchiyu, but if these 10, this batch, contains one that was already counted, so I don't have 10, so I can't sanctify the 10th. Nevertheless, Niftar is exempt, a minion in a row. Because when he was counting, there were many other sheep in the pen. So it was very possible. I don't know which ones are going to come out. You open the door and they come out and you count, and the 10th one you hit with the red strap, the red stripe. So anyone could have gone out. I don't know. It happens to be that one of them that went out was the one that was already counted. But when I was counting, it was a good counting because any of them could have gone out, any of those who were never counted before. And that's the halacha. Amar Rava, Rava says, minyan haro'o, poiter. If, when you count it, at least it had the potential to be a good count, even if practically at the end it didn't end up to be a good count, nevertheless, it's considered a good count, and the tenth is tithe, and the tenth is holy. Rava is talking about a case, you had 10 sheep, right?
Right.
You opened the door, and they started marching out. Five left. And then there were another five who were about to go out. And one of the five dropped dead. Now I don't have 10 anymore. But the first five, they fulfilled the obligation. Because when they went out, there was another five waiting to go out. So it was a counting that had the potential that was worthy, that could have been counted. Then some technicality, something happened. So their count is considered a good count. And you no longer have to tie them. You no longer have to, they're taken care of. So to over here. Even if you're gonna say that the case of a doubt, you don't. It makes no sense. Why does the Mishnah say that if one of them jumped into the herd, one that was already counted, jumped in, but I don't know which one,
Yeah. They're
all exempt? Why? Why? They should all be counted. I mean, this because when you count and 10 go out, if all 10 were never counted, fine. Then it's a legitimate tithing. And even if not, since when you started counting, it had the potential. Because you could have had 10 that were there in the barn, you had the 10 that were never counted. And any of them could have gone out. So even if it turns out that one of them went out, was already counted, but since it was a good counting, therefore they're all exempt. So why does the Mishnah say that if all one jumps in and we can't recognize it, then none of them have to be counted? Ella, rather, we continue in 7a. Ma'is l'chamem, you have to say, because I have siri vade, Amar Rachman, v'lo yasiri sofer. That the Torah says it only has to be a definite counting, not gzeiros hakasos, only if you know for certain. But if in doubt, you don't have to. So therefore, I can say, Hachinami also, I can say, that a city of Adon Harav Leah city suffering. When the Braise says, I was trying to refute the proof of Rav Hanani. He says, maybe the Braise is saying that the reason why the suffix, the one you substituted for the donkey, you could use as Maiser, you can count as one of the 10. So I said maybe it's only, we're talking about a case where there's only 9. Besides that sheep is 9 definite that need to do Maiser, and one maybe belongs to the Kayin. So then make up your mind. Either way, if it belongs to the Israelite, then I have 10 sheep, I'm obligated. And if it's 9, then there's only 9, and one belongs to the Kayin, then there's no tithing here. Hurry. You can't say that, because if it's in doubt, it won't help. Even since there's a doubt, so it doesn't help that, well, maybe it belongs to the Israelite and therefore I have 10. In doubt, the Torah says it doesn't help. You can only use for Maiser. You only obligate him. It has to be definite.
Status,
right? So why, even if you have 9, there's no point in counting this other one.
Right.
Well, it doesn't work. It's not effective. Why is it Braise effective? So you have to say this proves Rabba's point. This proves Rabba's point that since it's, even if the Kohen grabbed it, we would take it away from the Kohen. Because we say it belongs to the Jew. Financially, it belongs to the Jew 100%. If it belongs to the Jew 100%, there's no doubt. So therefore, the Israelite is doing Maiser with his animals that are 100% his. And therefore, he's obligated, and therefore, it's effective. Continue to everyone have a wonderful day.